Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Else for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Confessions Magazine. It's called Virtual Nightmare. Here's the story. Khaki pants, black polo shirt, red ball cap, check, check, and triple check. He was dressed exactly as he said he would be. This had to be the man I met through a singles website and chatted with for 6 weeks. "Forgive me," I muttered, and looked heavenward because I told him a little lie. Instead of black pants and a red blouse with my hair down around my shoulders, I had on jeans and a hooded sweatshirt, and my hair was pulled up in a casual ponytail. This was my first time to meet a cyber lover, and I had to check him out to make sure he was really a 23-year-old aspiring actor and not a 60-year-old retiree. I drew in a deep breath to steady my nerves and pulled open the door to a local bookstore and coffee shop. As I stepped inside, he turned away from the order counter and looked straight at me. "Hi, Mrs. Stevenson. Long time no see." A knot formed in my throat, and I was dizzy with shock. This was no stranger. I've been having cyber sex with my best friend's son. "Max," I stuttered, still reconciling what I did with the young man who stood before me. "It's so nice to see you." I shuddered inwardly, knowing I've seen far more of Max than he realized. Our online chats began as friendly exchanges between lonely gal and dream lover in an online chat room for singles. From there, we progressed to instant messages full of smiley faces and winking icons. Then came the evening when dream lover clicked something on his end and a box popped up on my screen. "Dream lover has invited you to view his webcam. Accept or decline?" I hesitantly clicked the accept link and waited as another small screen opened. Instead of a face, I found myself staring at a bare chest and abdomen. His trousers were unbuttoned, and a line of hair trailed from his navel to disappear below the waistband. I immediately clicked the button to close the screen, and when he asked me what happened, I feigned ignorance about my online skills. "Dream lover, that's okay. I'll walk you through it. It's easy. Lonely gal. Maybe next time, okay? I really need to log off and get ready for bed. The alarm clock goes off early. Good night." And I closed the instant message as quickly as I could, embarrassed at what I did. I was your average middle-aged baby boomer with a good job and a nice home in the suburbs. Why on earth was I chatting online with a younger man? "I'm pregnant, George," I stammered, my fears of the last 2 weeks finally confirmed. "Are you sure? I mean, what did the doctor tell you?" A muscle twitched in his jaw. "I haven't seen a doctor. You know how rumors travel in small towns. Martha Jo Weiss was the biggest gossip in Hayesville, Georgia, and the words patient confidentiality meant nothing to the nosy nurse at the town's only medical clinic." "Then how do you know you're pregnant, Heidi?" His response held a note of irritation. I pushed aside my unfinished dinner and stared at him across the small dinette table in my apartment. "I took one of those home pregnancy tests," I explained. "You know how Dr. Reeve's nurse is. If I went in there for a pregnancy test, the whole town would know in 30 minutes. I couldn't risk that for either of us. I even drove to the next town to buy the test kit." George pushed his plate aside as well An unplanned pregnancy is a surefire way to destroy an appetite. Could the test be wrong? Did you do it right? Worry creased his forehead and he clenched his napkin in one hand. It could be wrong, I answered, but I don't think it is. I'm very late and I've been a little queasy a few mornings. Maybe you just ate something bad in the school cafeteria. He was trying mighty hard to rationalize away the truth. I'm over 6 weeks late, George, and my breasts are tender too. Bad food won't do that. Christ, Heidi. He pushed back from the table, rattling plates and silverware and toppling his chair. How could you let this happen? You know how conservative the bank industry is. And you think the school board will be thrilled by this? He wasn't the only one with a job on the line. George is a few years older than I am and a loan officer at Hayesville Bank and Trust, which was recently purchased by a larger banking conglomerate. Upper management was impressed with him, and they hinted that they had plans for him in the new organization. We were dating for 6 months, and I was so in love that I let George talk me into his bed after only a few dates. I couldn't afford a scandal either. I took my job as an English teacher at Hayesville High School straight out of college. I only had a year of teaching experience under my belt and was far from being tenured. No doubt the school board wouldn't want an unwed mother setting an example for the town's children. The 60s and 70s might have ushered in the age of free love, but small southern towns were still quite old-fashioned, even in the 80s. There was one other option. It was legal, finally, and I'd have to travel out of town to get it done. I always dreamed of having a family. I just never dreamed it would happen quite like this. Why weren't you more careful? He badgered. This could screw up everything for me. He stopped pacing and pinned me with a look so hot it could have melted glass. Me? Have you considered that you might be at fault here? Maybe you didn't use the condom properly, or maybe you bought cheap ones. I wasn't the only one in the back seat of your car, I snapped, thinking back to the night I suspected I conceived. If you went on the pill like I suggested, none of this would have happened, he countered, slapping his palm on the tabletop. That's not fair, George. By then, tears were threatening to spill down my cheeks, and my throat felt as if it was in a chokehold. We agreed. Being a single small-town school teacher on the pill in the early 80s wasn't a good option for me either. The same nurse who would blab pregnancy test results would also gossip about birth control pill prescriptions and question why a teacher dating the bank's loan officer would need them. George agreed to use condoms, which he purchased through the mail. The plain brown packages were indistinguishable from the book club and music club shipments he received regularly. I stood, gathered our plates, and walked toward my small kitchen, hoping to regain my composure while I rinsed the dishes and loaded the dishwasher. Mundane tasks hold a certain comfort and often help me relax or work through a problem. George intercepted me and set the plates on the counter. I'm sorry, baby, he said, pulling me to him and wrapping me in his strong embrace. We did have an agreement, and I'm a first-class jerk for blaming it all on you. You just caught me by surprise, that's all. No kidding, I muttered into the front of his shirt, which was damp from my tears. He stroked one hand up and down my back in a comforting gesture and gently kissed the top of my head. "It sort of takes the bang out of my news," he said softly after a short silence. Pulling away, I wiped my tears with the back of my hand. "News? What news?" "I received a call from the bank headquarters today, and they offered me a senior loan position at a new branch in Atlanta." This was a great career move for George, but where did it leave me? Alone and pregnant in a town two states away from my family in North Carolina, my concerns must have been obvious on my face because George pulled me back into his arms. "We'll work this out, Heidi. I swear we will." We were married 2 weeks later in a brief civil ceremony at the county courthouse. We explained the suddenness of our nuptials by saying we wanted to be married when George began his new job in Atlanta. I planned to finish out the remaining month of my teaching contract and join him as soon as possible. Then we'd be among a new group of people who might not ask questions about my expanding middle and how long or short we were married. By July 1st, we were settled into our first house, a small brick rancher with a shaded backyard and beds filled with colorful flowers. George's new job was going well, and he was making enough money for me to stay at home and be a full-time mother. I wasted no time choosing a bedroom for the baby and selected paint and wallpaper that would suit either a boy or a girl. George and I planned to use his 4th of July vacation to begin decorating the nursery and have it ready when our precious bundle of joy arrived. Instead, we spent the day in the emergency room when I began having cramps and bleeding. George bowed his head and cried with me when the doctor told us I miscarried. We didn't plan this baby, but we made the best of an awkward situation. I had no doubt we would have married eventually. The pregnancy merely sped things up. We had no choice but to resume our lives after mourning our loss. The doctor told us he saw no reason why we couldn't try for another baby after an appropriate waiting period to let my body recuperate. With planning and luck, we could have the next baby on our schedule. It was too late for me to get another full-time teaching position, but I didn't want to sit home all day and think about my loss. I approached the local school system in September about working as a substitute teacher and was quickly hired. I typically worked a day or two each week at either the middle school or the high school. Then, in January, an English teacher had to take emergency medical leave after a devastating car accident, and I was offered the opportunity to take her position, an opportunity I grabbed with both hands. Blessings often come at unexpected times and in unusual ways, and my new job brought a blessing named Lorna Turner. She was a seasoned teaching veteran and occupied the classroom next to mine. Her sage advice helped me survive those first awkward weeks, and when she invited George and me to a Super Bowl party at her home, I accepted eagerly. We were anxious to make new friends. We knew a few couples from our neighborhood and met several more through the bank. But there was no one couple who felt special until we met Lorna and her husband, Doug. We clicked immediately. Lorna and I, of course, had teaching in common, and we learned we shared several hobbies, including gardening and reading romance novels. George and Doug hit it off immediately and discovered their mutual love of all sports. Our weekends were often spent at ball games or barbecuing in our backyards. Though Lorna is quite a bit older than I am, the 13-year age difference never mattered to me. What What did matter was my inability to get pregnant again. George and I were both tested, and preliminary results showed nothing wrong. The doctor offered to refer us to a fertility specialist, but George felt that going through a lot of tests and calculated measures to conceive a child made it seem like a chore than a joy. George was doing well at the bank, and I was offered a permanent teaching position when the injured teacher opted not to return. I really couldn't complain. Even though our marriage began on shaky ground, we had a good life. 3 years after we met, Lorna arrived at school one day, looking pale and acting very distracted. "Are you feeling all right?" I asked, concerned for my best friend. "You look a little green around the edges." She began, and then dashed out of the room with her hand over her mouth. I followed her to the teacher's bathroom, guessing she succumbed to one of the viruses that works their way periodically through the faculty and student body. When she emerged from a stall and splashed cold water on her face, her color began to return. "Do you have a stomach bug?" I asked, wondering how I could help my friend yet limit my exposure. She shook her head and then rinsed her mouth with a handful of water. She glanced around the bathroom to ensure our privacy. "I'm pregnant," she stated matter-of-factly. "I have no idea how." "Oh, really? No idea?" I raised one eyebrow and grinned. "You know what I mean, Heidi. My first husband divorced me because I couldn't get pregnant, and his family wouldn't accept us adopting children. I'm glad now I never brought a child into such a narrow-minded family." "Does anyone else know? Have you ever told Doug?" "He was right there with me when the test showed positive," she said, nodding. "Matter of fact, he's the one who figured out I might be pregnant. It seems my bosom has enlarged considerably," and she blushed as she left the sentence unfinished. "You guys are going to be the greatest parents," I broke off when the door opened and another teacher walked in. Back in the privacy of her classroom, her expression stilled and grew serious. "I need you to keep this a secret, Heidi, even from George." I'd honor her wishes, of course, but I didn't understand the need for such secrecy. "I'm 39 years old, and any number of problems can crop up with a pregnancy at my age," she explained. "We just want to make sure everything's okay before we announce it. You understand, don't you? It's going to be hard explaining away the morning sickness, but hopefully the doctor can give me something when I see him tomorrow afternoon." I couldn't help but feel a twinge of jealousy. Lorna and Doug reconciled themselves to a childless marriage and look what a surprise Mother Nature played on them. Maybe she'd play one on me too, but I hoped she wouldn't wait until I was nearly 40. Lorna resigned at the end of the school year. "This is my one shot at motherhood, and I'm going to do it right," she told me. Doug's job more than provided for them, so her salary wasn't a necessity. On a hot, humid day in August, Max Stephen Turner squalled his way into the world, and George and I were right there at the hospital to welcome him. We were his Aunt Heidi and Uncle George and shared in the highlights of his life. His first birthday, starting kindergarten, playing a little league ball, his first date. Just like Loma, I finally resigned myself to marriage without children. But I could dote on Max to my heart's content. By the time George and I finally got around to considering adoption, We were too old for the state agencies to consider us, and international adoption involved so much red tape and expense. I went back to school for my master's degree. George kept being promoted at the bank, which expanded even more and had branches in 8 states. Sometimes we were like ships that passed in the night, each with our own life and content in our existence. 3 weeks after my 45th birthday, George stood in the doorway between our bedroom and the glamour bath of the new home we purchased several years before. He watched as I stared at the bathroom scale, which registered another extra pound. I was still in good shape for a woman my age, only 5 pounds heavier than when I got married, a gray hair here and there, some laugh lines around my eyes. George was dressed in a new tailored suit, white shirt, silk tie, and Italian loafers. He kept in good shape, too, probably better than I did. Just recently, he joined a new gym, updated his wardrobe and hairstyle, and started wearing designer cologne, something he never wore before. Without a word, he turned and left for work. Later that afternoon, Lorna and I sat around her kitchen table, drinking coffee and nibbling scones hot from her oven. Max was in his first year of college, and Lorna was enjoying her empty nest. She never went back to work after her son was born and spent her time gardening or involved in various civic activities. You don't think that George could be... I bit off the end of the sentence, feeling foolish for my suspicions. Could be what? She asked between bites. It's nothing. I busied myself with buttering a scone and stirring my coffee. Lorna leaned across the table and laid her hand on mine. What, Heidi? What's bothering you? I think he might be having an affair. There, I verbalized it. Lorna nearly choked on her coffee. George? She asked incredulously. That man adores you. Adored me. I thought back to the months since the 50th birthday. He doesn't anymore. Heidi, that's just foolishness. How long have you two known each other? 20 years? George has always been an attentive husband. Lorna's voice was calm and earnest. We haven't made love in weeks. He says he's too tired from work, but he always has enough energy to go out with the boys from work every week. I swallowed and bit back the tears. He bought a whole new wardrobe, all designer clothes, in styles and colors he's never worn before, and he wears cologne now. He never did that either. He said it gave him a headache. The tears fell despite my efforts to halt them. Lorna rose and grabbed a box of tissues from the counter. Honey, he's just going through a little midlife crisis. She reassured me, snapping a tissue from the box and pressing it into my hand. Why do you think Doug has that Harley in the garage? George is just trying to cope with getting older. He'll snap out of it soon. You'll see. I wanted to believe her, but as George became more distant, my fears escalated. When I found a package of studded condoms in the washing machine after laundering his clothes, I was devastated. Even when we had sex, we didn't use condoms. The final blow came when I discovered a hefty charge from a local jewelry store on my credit card. Knowing I didn't make the charge, I made a few phone calls and learned the charge was for a diamond tennis bracelet. Either George was deliberately trying to get caught, or he carelessly pulled my card from his wallet instead of his own. Regardless, I wasn't wearing a diamond bracelet, but I believed in my heart that some other woman was. All the signs were there, just as plain as the nose on my face. This was not an innocent midlife crisis. I left a copy of my credit card receipt in plain view on the kitchen table and then called Lorna and asked if I could stay at her house for a few days until I could think things through. I didn't want to face my husband. 2 days later, George called and left a message for me. He asked me to meet with him at our home, and I agreed. Maybe surrounded by good memories, I could persuade him to go for counseling and put our marriage back on track. The confrontation was calmer than I expected. There was no screaming or shouting, not even tears. I cried them all out, talking the situation over with Lorna, Loma. At first, we simply stared at each other awkwardly across the table. The receipt still lay between us, one corner anchored by a salt shaker. I want, we broke the silence simultaneously. You first, I offered, hoping I'd hear some rational explanation or at least an apology and promise of future fidelity. I want a divorce, he announced, his voice flat and unemotional. But I called a marriage counselor about setting up an appointment, I began. She can see us tomorrow afternoon after I finish at school. Let's not waste her time or ours, Heidi. I'm in love with someone else and I want to marry her. The shock of his admission hit me full force. Who is she? I asked, my voice barely a whisper. Nobody you know. She's at Georgia State. Oh, the faculty? My curiosity was getting the best of me. I wanted to know what kind of woman I lost my husband to. George shook his head. She's a graduate student. I didn't lose him to a woman my husband was involved with. I didn't lose him to a woman. My husband was involved with a mere girl. My stuff is packed and I'm moving to a condo. I assumed you'd use Jake Moore, he said, referring to our family attorney. So I've hired someone else. This doesn't have to be ugly, Heidi. My whole body felt heavy and I could hear my pulse hammering in my ears. As much as I didn't want to be a 45-year-old divorcee, I also didn't want to be with someone who didn't love me back. 90 days later, the divorce was final, and George was married to Ruthie, the graduate student. He was quite generous in the divorce settlement, most likely to ease his conscience, or at least that's what I chose to believe. George didn't want the house because Ruthie wanted something newer and more modern. I didn't want to ramble about in a big 5-bedroom house, so we sold it and divided the equity. I purchased a small townhouse close to the school where I taught and began to rebuild my life. Lorna was the rock I leaned on through the bad times. She survived divorce and assured me I would too. She let me cry on her shoulder and listen to my endless rants. My dearest friend talked me off the proverbial ledge more than once. Then our roles reversed when she was diagnosed with lung cancer. She's never smoked in her life, and the diagnosis stunned everyone. Then it was my turn to be strong for her, to pay her back for all the support she's given me through the years. I held her hand when radiation and chemotherapy made her too sick to even sit up in bed, and I was by her side, along with her husband and son, when she took her last breath. She attacked the disease with the same grace and courage she displayed in everyday life, and she stayed cheerful to the end. I tried to stay in contact with Doug afterward, but it was awkward for us both. Our communication finally dwindled to an annual Christmas card and the occasional chance meeting at the mall. Lorna encouraged me to meet other men after the divorce, and I tried on several occasions to dip my toe into the dating pool. I tried personal ads, singles groups, and online matchmaking sites. After 5 years of on-again, off-again dating, I stumbled upon AtlantaMatch.com, a singles website with a chat room. I filled out the requisite profile and set up my account. It took a while to catch onto the chat lingo. Laugh out loud, C-U-L-8-R-O-T-O-H. Eventually, I mastered the basic terms and looked forward to chats. A week after joining, I was matched with a man who called himself Dream Lover. Though only 33, he seemed wise beyond his years, and I decided if George could marry a girl half his age, lonely gal, could simply chat with someone 17 years her senior. This second night we chatted, he invited me to view his webcam. I was shocked and at the same time excited by the sight of his bare chest. Dream Lover, want to see more? How much more would he show me if I didn't stop things? Then I heard about cam sex and considered it little more than pornography. Lonely gal, maybe next time. Let's just chat, okay? And we did until nearly 2 o'clock in the morning. Before long, I had a standing date with Dream Lover every night at 9 o'clock. I learned he was a college graduate, worked in retail, and had a passion for acting. He dreamed of becoming a Broadway star. I told him about my life, leaving out any details which might identify me. Despite enjoying the chats, a part of me was still a little unsure of this sort of relationship. One Monday night, about 6 weeks after we met, Dream Lover posed a new question. Dream Lover, want a cyber? What on earth is that? I wondered. I typed a question mark to indicate my confusion and hit the enter key. Dream Lover, you don't know? Lonely gal, no. Tell me what it is. But did I really want to know? Dream Lover, it's when you do it online, you know, like role-playing sex. Lonely gal, maybe next time. Dream Lover, babe, you keep saying maybe next time, but what if there isn't a next time? What if something happens to you or to me tomorrow? Life's too short to live it to the fullest. I know because I lost someone very special a while back. Life is full of uncertainties, but is that any reason to send sexually explicit messages to a stranger? Dream Lover, consider it, okay? It's really hot, and just think, you can't get pregnant or catch any diseases. Laugh out loud, and we can do it anywhere our imagination takes us. Lonely gal, I'll think about it. I logged off for the night, but the mention of sex must have jolted my subconscious into action, because that night I dreamed of having sex on a white sandy beach with a man whose face stayed obliterated by shadows. I awoke, aroused, and decided that perhaps a little sexy chat couldn't hurt anything. No one would know. My anonymity was pretty much insured. Lonely gal would get her sexual kicks online and no one would be the wiser or be hurt. The next evening, I logged into Atlanta Match and surfed around the site waiting for Dreamlover to log on. When a private message window opened, I couldn't deny the spark of excitement that darted through me. Dreamlover, hi babe, have a good day? Actually, it was a horrid day, but I didn't want to spend the evening griping about the janitor who spilled a bucket of filthy mop water in my classroom, or the parents who refused to accept their son was a bully who delighted in tormenting any boy smaller than he. Lonely gal, great, how about you? Dream lover, I started a new job today. Lonely gal, oh? Dream lover, yeah, this one is days only, so I have evenings free for auditions and rehearsals and chats with you. Grin. Dream lover has invited you to view his webcam. Accept or decline. I hesitated, still unsure if I wanted to venture into this territory, but my dream still haunted me, and I decided, why not? I clicked accept, and the viewing screen opened. This time he aimed the camera a little differently, a little lower. I could see his well-toned abs. I could tell he was naked, but his keyboard tray blocked the view of anything risque. Dream lover, have you thought about it? He edged his chair back a little, and I realized I was holding my breath. Dream lover, you still there? I can stop this whole thing now and never log onto the website again, or I could indulge in a little fantasy. We could play a game and achieve a little sexual satisfaction. My thoughts raced. Lonely gal, I've thought about it. Dream lover, and? Lonely gal, I'll try anything once, twice if I like it. Grin. Show me what you've got. Oh my God, did I really type that? What turned me from a quiet, inhibited wallflower to a brazen cyber hussy? I didn't have to think very hard for the answer. George's betrayal and disloyalty fueled my actions, and my loneliness drove me to engage in completely uncharacteristic behavior. Dream lover, not yet. First, I want to tell you what I'd do to you if you were here. And he did. In explicit and graphic detail, he explained the techniques and positions he'd used to pleasure me to orgasm. All I could do was type an occasional okay or yes as he created a scene straight from an erotic novel. Dream lover, then after you come, I'll enter you from behind and pound you until he pushed away from his desk and revealed himself. He reached toward or forward to adjust the webcam camera and zoomed in on his crotch. With one hand, he stroked himself. I watched, mesmerized. Dream lover, was that good for you? Was it? Was it truly satisfying in a soul-deep way? Or did watching a man simply appeal to my sexual needs, which were ignored for so long? Dream lover, I guess no answer means no, or you're still enjoying the afterglow. Lonely gal, I'm a cyber virgin. It was my first time. I think I'll have to reserve judgment. Dream lover, laugh out loud. At least you're honest. Lonely gal, I really need to go. I almost typed papers to grade and gave away my profession. Work to do. Dream lover, well, good night, lonely gal. I hope you're not so lonely anymore. The screen went black. And in many ways, I felt lonelier than ever. I resorted to a cyber affair with heaven only knows who, And I knew I wouldn't sleep again that night until I released the tension building in my body. I tossed all night and had to drag myself out of bed when the alarm sounded at 6 o'clock. My conscience was telling me this must be wrong if it kept me awake all night. My newly awakened libido, however, argued the opposing viewpoint. I dragged through my classes, came home, and fixed myself a light supper before succumbing to the lure of the computer. Dreamlover was waiting for me as soon as I logged on. There was no chit-chat that night, no trite pleasantries. He simply issued the webcam invitation and greeted me with a view of his arousal. Dreamlover, see what you do to me? If I could do that to him, sight unseen, been able to excite George during the last years of our marriage? All my insecurities came rushing back even as I watched my cyber partner. He also suggested I buy a webcam of my own and reciprocate the pleasure. 2 hours and a second orgasm later, he said goodnight, and once again, I experienced a sleepless night. I deliberately didn't log on the following night to give myself time to consider all the ramifications of my actions. Every way I looked at it, I knew I had to call this off before I did something stupid to jeopardize my reputation and career. I certainly wasn't going to expose myself via an internet connection. On Friday night, I tell him it was over. I tell him he needed to find a woman closer to his age and someone who could share his enthusiasm for the more openly sensual side of an online relationship. When I logged in on Friday, he was waiting for me. Dream lover, ready to cyber again? Lonely gal, no, we need to talk, and I can't do it staring at your body. Dream lover, I probably couldn't talk staring at your body either. Actually, it's good that you want to talk because I have a confession to make. Those words set alarm bells ringing. I heard of women being duped online and considered the possibility when I signed up for Atlanta Match, but this man seemed to he seemed so sincere in his chats. Certain things he told me didn't ring true for someone trying to be deceptive. Yet, lonely gal, go ahead. At least I know you're not really a woman. You're not 70 years old, are you? Rather than be on the defensive, I'd make a preemptive attack. Dream lover, I'm not 70, but I wasn't truthful about my age. I told you I was 33. I'm really 23. Wave after wave of shock slapped at me. Isn't it bad enough I was carrying on with a man 12 years younger? Then I found out he's young enough to be my child. And what if he was really only 16 instead of 23? I'm a teacher, and this could have been one of my students. Kids today are more social savvy than in my day, and every one of them has a cell phone, computer, and webcam, and knows how to use them to full capacity. At least once a week, I'd have to send someone to detention for text messaging in class instead of paying attention to the lesson. Dream lover, is that a problem? Was it ever? It was a problem from the beginning, and I just refused to see it. Lonely gal, I can't do this anymore. We can't do this anymore. The chatting, the camera, it has to stop. Dream lover, why? Just because I'm not as old as you thought? Age is just a number. My mom was older than my dad, and it didn't matter to them. Lonely gal, but you're 22 years younger than me. We're an entire lifetime apart. Dream lover, you don't think that 5 minutes ago? You didn't think that 5 minutes ago. We've been chatting for 6 weeks and getting to know each other. I thought we were close. I thought we were good for each other. And now you want to throw it all away because of a number? Lonely gal, please understand this from my perspective. This is just too much for me. It's not right. I can't chat with you ever again. Dream lover, meet me, please. Anywhere, name the place. Let's talk face to face so I can convince you I'm not a mistake. We're not a mistake. At that moment, I qualified myself for the Too Dumb to Live Club and let my curiosity allow me to agree to a meeting. At 7 o'clock the following evening, he suggested common grounds, a coffee shop, and bookstore that turned out to be only 5 miles from my home. He told me what he'd be wearing, and I did the same. But at the last moment, I donned jeans and a sweatshirt and pulled back my hair with an elastic band. I could check him out anonymously and see if I wanted to talk. I had nothing to lose except maybe another few shreds of my self-respect. At the appointed hour, I stood in front of Common Grounds and peered through the large plate glass window in front. He stood at the ordering counter with his back to me. I drew in a fortifying breath, pulled open the heavy wood and glass door, and entered, prepared to check out my way too young cyber lover. If I had the nerve, I'd introduce myself and calmly and rationally explain why we had to break off all contact. I would make him believe I was wrong for him. As I passed the first row of tables, he turned, a large cup of coffee in his hand, and looked straight at me. A bright smile of recognition spread across his face, and in 4 strides, he was beside me. "Hi, Mrs. Stevenson. Long time no see." This was Max Turner, my dear friend's son. I was at the hospital for his birth and stood by his side when his mother was buried. What perverse force of nature put the two of us on the same cyber path in the universe? "Are you alone, Mrs. Stevenson?" he asked. I nodded, still too shell-shocked to think straight, let alone speak. "I'm waiting for someone," he said, "but we can visit until she gets here. No thanks. I just came in to search for a book. I won't disturb your date." I scurried away and rushed to the restroom to hide. My cheeks burned hot in remembrance of what I did and saw. Humiliation and embarrassment devoured me. When I regained a modicum of composure, I returned to the bookstore and slipped into an aisle where I could watch the coffee shop. Thumbing idly through a volume I randomly grabbed off the shelf, I watched Max sit at a table in the corner, alternately sipping his coffee and checking his watch. Each time the door opened, he glanced up, looking for a woman in black and red who would never appear. At 8 o'clock, he tossed his empty cup into the trash, glanced around the room once more, and shuffled dejectedly to the door. I knew I'd never log onto his website again, and hopefully he would forget about me and find someone else. He was young and resilient. He'd bounce back. Once he left, I walked to the counter and ordered a cup of tea to calm my nerves. By this time, the shop was full with the Saturday night crowd. As I surveyed the room for an empty table, I heard someone call my name. Turning in the direction of the voice, I saw Alex Klein, who lived 3 doors down from our first house in Atlanta. His wife was the first to greet us after we moved in. "Alex, how wonderful to see you," I said, glancing around for his wife, Belinda. If you're looking for an empty seat, feel free to sit here. He pointed to the chair across the two-person table from him. It's a madhouse in here on Saturday night, so I always come early to get me a good seat. I didn't want to take Belinda's seat, I said hesitantly. His expression darkened. You didn't hear? Belinda passed 6 years ago from an aneurysm. I was so wrapped up in my own life, first the divorce and then Loma's death, that I lost touch with many old and dear friends. I'm so sorry, Alex. What more could I say? How are your children doing? We caught up on nearly 10 years of graduations, weddings, and births, and I shared simply that George and I were no longer married. The walk down memory lane was a pleasant one, and I found myself laughing, something that was missing from my life for too long. When I finished my tea, I rose and explained I needed to get home before I got too late. It got too late. This might be out of line, he said hesitantly, but could I call you sometime? We can meet here again or take in a movie, if it's okay with you, that is. His shyness was endearing. Like me, he's probably been away from the dating game for a while and needed to take baby steps before jumping in the deep end first. Too bad I didn't do that. I learned a lesson, though, about the not-so-innocent online world and that I needed an in-person relationship with someone, not just words on a computer monitor. And who knows, maybe Alex might be the one to show me how to get back on track again. Sure, I answered, feeling more optimistic than I felt in years. Give me your email address and I'll get in touch. No, I said, grabbing a pen from my purse and jotting my phone number on a napkin. Let's leave cyberspace out of this. Good enough. An old-fashioned phone call works for me. He folded the napkin carefully and slipped it into his shirt pocket. Me too. Okay, that's the end of that story. Well, that was a very unusual story. I didn't even know really what it was about, but I don't write it. I just read it. Anyways, this is going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. This has been volunteer Janie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a great week and take care, and I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.